Welcome to another episode of the Examine Life podcast, a podcast where we take some of life's thorniest questions and deconstruct them in a way that is pragmatic and philosophical so that you can lead a more productive, examined, and joyful life. My name is Kehi, and today I'm joined by my guest, Derek Haswell, and we're going to answer the question, what is IFS therapy? What's up, Derek?
Hey, Kay, what's going on? Thanks for having me.
I am so, so excited to have you here, Derek. You are a friend, a thinking partner, a fellow entrepreneur, a fellow dad, and just so much goodness emanates from your world. So this is going to be a juicy conversation. So thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, psyched to be here. And IFS is a big passion of mine. So excited to share some of that.
Awesome. So let's jump right in. You are a polymath, a man of many, many trades and skills, someone who I admire dearly. And when you introduce yourself, I know you as an entrepreneur. I know you as an executive coach. I know you as a co-founder. But tell us briefly, how do you introduce yourself?
Yeah, thanks, Kay. So I introduce myself as two things in particular, co-founder of 10% Happier. It's a meditation app kind of ecosystem. We have a meditation app, a podcast, and Dan Harris, one of my co-founders, has written several books in and around meditation as well. And my role there has been for the last 10 years as a VP of product. So from the jump, just leading our content and our product and content development. And that has been such a fun ride. And then the other side of what I do is exec coaching. So I work now with founders and execs on the way I describe it as their outer and their inner work. The outer work of ways they drive impact in the world and their inner work of ways to become more aligned. And I'm really fascinated by the intersection of those two things. Not so much just the outer work, getting people to drive more impact or productivity, as you know very well, and not just the inner work, which I know lots of meditation teachers and therapists who are incredible, incredible at just doing the inner work. And I really like straddling the balance between those two, working on business-shaped problems, and then figuring out what inner struggles people bump into and kind of toggling back and forth between those two. So those are my two working worlds. And then the last thing I'll say is I'm a dad of three kiddos. We homeschool, we live on a mini homestead, my wife and I, and the parenting side of my life has been a major theme and thread for me as well.
Amazing, amazing. And just so many threads coming through here. So I want to share them with our audience. One is my gateway into the world of spirituality, of meditation, was actually Dan Harris's book, 10% Happier, which I highly recommend to listeners. Because for me, I think the subtitle is A Skeptic's Guide to Meditation, or a skeptic's, you would remember the exact phrasing, but it had the word skeptic in it. And that appealed. And I think that's why what you and I have in common is maybe not inherent skepticism, but pragmatism that's grounded in the world of business, that's grounded in the world of like getting shit done, that works adjacent to the spiritual side, the meditative side, the contemplative side. But I love that kind of inner and outer harmony. The other serendipitous, there were a few other serendipitous connections. One, another being that this is another Twitter friendship. And, you know, there have been many, many of our guests have been friends from Twitter, where just playful banter around topics, you know, we were probably talking a lot about self-worth and achievement types and the emptiness of the hedonic treadmill. And so a cold, you know, just cold DMs, and now here we are. So, and then a bunch of mutuals, Dan Platt, the whole Reboot family. It's just fun to see all of these worlds collide, as well as our guest, Jess Morey, who is now my coach. So,
amazing. I love that you and Jess are working together like that. And yeah, the Twitter friendships are just so cool. I think I Enneagram pilled you at some point in one of our threads, and that kind of cracked you open to that whole world. So
exactly.
Feeling is mutual. Okay.
And that might come up. So before we jump into today's question, I just wanted to shout out that we have our own group coaching program. And in fact, we're going to get Derek to do a guest presentation at one of them. where we look at these questions of balancing the inner work and the outer work and how you can use that in your business life, in the career transitions, while also kind of really thinking about these questions of identity and self-worth and ambition. So radreads.co/coaching, and we will jump into our question. What is IFS therapy? So IFS, Derek, kick us off first with what that acronym stands for.
Yeah, thank you. So IFS stands for Internal Family Systems. And before I talk about what it is, I'll just say that it's one of the most powerful tools that I've seen to help people develop more self-awareness and to do healing or integration work inside of their systems. It really has freed me up, and I've seen it free many people up to just show up more authentically as their full selves. And the origin story is Richard Schwartz. He often goes by Dick. He, in the 80s, is a family therapist, and he's working with clients. And along the way, he had some particularly challenging clients, and he noticed the way that they talked about parts of their system when they were kind of talking about different struggles they had. And I think we can all relate a little bit to this. Like, there's a part of me that just wants to sit down and cry. There's a part of me that just wants to throw this chair through the window. There's a part of me that, so we kind of use that colloquially. And Dick spotted that in his clients, and he started working with these parts of people's systems as if they were members of their family. So he kind of took his family therapy and started applying it to people's inner worlds. And it was a journey for him, but it really opened up this branch of therapy that it has started as kind of a therapeutic modality. And now for me, it's a way that I really see and move through the world. So I'll talk a little bit more about that in a bit. And so even though IFS is the new kid on the block, it's really popular with therapists, with coaches, with execs, with founders, folks that are interested in the healing and the awakening work, and has a really big impact.
Very cool. And when you say system, you're referring to kind of the human, right? Like, I have a part of me that's angry, a part of me that's, you know, on top of stuff, a part of me that is a people pleaser, things like that. Right.
Yeah. And it's actually one of the three kind of core aspects of IFS is working with those different parts of us as an interconnected system. So not just thinking of them as one-off pieces, but seeing the ways that they connect with one another. And there's some really cool work that folks can do using IFS to help bridge those gaps, create communication and more harmony in their systems.
Very cool. And so IFS is so when people say a modality of therapy, is it you would have like what's traditional talk therapy? Is that CBT, behavioral?
Yeah, cognitive behavioral therapy is the most common flavor and is
when someone says, I'm going to my therapist, it's usually a CBT therapist.
You know, there's a kind of a thing in therapy, and it's true with coaching too, which is like, can you define therapy? And it's because therapists use an ecology of practices or methodologies that they bring to any individual client interaction.
Got
so
it.
Sometimes they'll trot out CBT, sometimes they'll trot out IFS, and there are many, many, many different flavors of therapy. So actually, when you say, I'm going to my therapist, I will have no idea what flavor
Got
of therapy
it.
They're going to, unless you kind of get under the hood to understand their methodology.
Got it. And so CBT would be, is that more like talk therapy?
CBT is a flavor of talk therapy. It's another flavor of therapy.
So IFS is a tool for therapy. Does it touch the spiritual world at all? Because you and I have a lot of overlap in that world. Or again, maybe the lines are blurry, but where does IFS kind of bleed into spirituality?
Yeah, there's lots of cross chatter about kind of in the spiritual realm and IFS. I actually want to hit on that in a second, Kay. But I wonder if it would be helpful to talk first a little bit more about parts, the different kinds of parts that that IFS talks about. And then I want to hit on self, which connects directly to your question about how it ties into the spiritual world. Does that sound okay to you?
Perfect. Tell me about the parts.
Yeah. So parts, as I mentioned, colloquially, we just refer to them as different parts of our systems. And in IFS, we relate to these different parts of us as if they're kind of personalities in us that communicate to us through thoughts, through emotions, through feelings in our body. And in IFS, we're kind of tuning in to those different modes of communication, the different ways that they show up, and we're working to understand them. So parts, the central to IFS, kind of one of the three pillars, is that we have many parts. And these many parts are all trying to help us in some way. So Dick's most popular book is called No Bad Parts, and that really underlines this whole idea. We have many parts, all of them are trying to help. And,
got it.
And with these IFS parts, the idea is that we have different parts of our lives, different parts of our system, that sometimes when we experience hurt or pain or trauma, when we're younger, when we're as old as we are right now, some of these parts will take on roles, sometimes extreme roles, where they will do their best to help us not have to experience that pain or trauma, or they'll protect us, they'll help us get us through that time. And and so the different flavors of parts that Dick kind of helped develop, there are three categories. There's one set of parts that's forward-looking, kind of looking to the future and saying, never again. That these are parts that try to do everything they can, planning and plotting to make sure that you don't find yourself in a situation that's going to be challenging like the times that you've been challenged before. The second category of parts are more focused on the present. These are called firefighters. And it's because they swoop in when you're experiencing or close to touching some of the pain that you experienced before. And they will make it so that you don't feel that pain, often by numbing with substances or behaviors that kind of just take you away. And the third category of parts is kind of past looking. These are called exiles. These are parts of us that carry hurt or beliefs from the different pains that they go through. And kind of just to finish this up and not make it too complicated, the managers and the firefighters, kind of the future looking and present looking parts, they are protectors for these younger parts. And that's kind of how the system of parts is laid out and how you can kind of work with these different layers of parts.
Wow. And the exiles are the young. So firefighters are today protecting you today. What was the forward looking one? Is the manager?
Managers. Yep.
Got it. Managers, yep. Firefighters, and exiles are kind of, and is it a fair statement that we try to the exiles are more repressed?
Exactly right. Yeah. Part of why they're called exiles is called almost like they're tucked away in our systems. And when you bump into other flavors of coaching, so I know you've had Joe Hudson on, he talks about, not wanting to feel certain emotions. You can kind of think of those as some exiles. Those are emotions that we are tucked away. We don't want to feel them. They're really hidden by these managers and firefighters and Got only it. Come out when there are, when you re-experience trauma or when you kind of open up the system and start working with it in this way.
Got it. Are there in each of those categories, are there some kind of like the Enneagram has 8 or 9 types or Myers-Briggs has, 10 permutations. Are there, like as a manager, is there like 10 manager subtypes and 10 firefighter subtypes? Or is it kind of the goal is to kind of tease them out and not prescribe them?
Yeah, okay, I love it. Just spoken as a true nerd, fellow nerd, I should say. actually, the latter of what you just said is spot on. It's we kind of want to meet these parts where they're at. There isn't further subclassifications. There are flavors of these, but yeah, no, it's kind of as they show up, you get to know them. And that dynamism, that kind of just being with these parts as they show up is part of the fun for both clients, for me as a client or for me as a coach, it becomes a really interesting exploration.
Got it. One other question on that. How do you start to identify these parts, right? And maybe I'll just add, we can use me, we can use an archetype. I know that the archetype of listener here is a very driven person that kind of always pushes themselves to do more. Can't really sit still. Every moment needs to be productive, fiercely competitive, not super in touch with their emotive side. It's kind of like emotions are kind of, you can put them in the lockbox and like bury them. Copes, probably copes a lot with alcohol or weed or just like productivity books. And so that type of person, and feel free to use me, feel free to speak in general terms. How would one think about those parts?
Yeah, one of the first things that we do in IFS for me coaching is you just kind of tune in. And oftentimes we'll kick off a session with meditation and see what's present. And what's present can be driven by, in my case, my work with founders and execs, it's often connected to folks' work and they're trying to get something done and they have some feelings about it. Maybe there's some conflict that's going on. Maybe there's some resistance that they're sensing internally. And when we just pause in the terrain of whatever struggle it is that they're grappling with, and we just kind of tune into like, one of the first questions you ask in IFS is, where do you experience that sensation in or around your body? And you kind of start to tune in somatically to figure out what's alive for someone. And that those are usually trailheads for these different parts that are active in people's systems and often where we start. So I'm excited to do more with you in a little bit, but that's the starting point.
And so I would suspect that many of our listeners, maybe they meditate a little bit on the 10% Happier app. They probably are, you know, spiritually curious. You know, they maybe read The Power of Now or a few Pema Chodron, Tara Brach books, but not like deeply committed to a spiritual path, probably very secular. But this question, and we had Johnny Miller on the podcast as well, this question of like somatic, right? And so I remember once I was working with a coach and they asked, you know, like, where are you feeling this anxiety right now? And like, oh, I'm feeling it in the back of my traps, right? And they're like, what shape does it have? Or is it warm? Or is it cold? What color is it? And I just, maybe this was a long time ago and I've changed, but I just stopped. I'm like, my mind couldn't go there. And I'd love for you to share, because you work with these like really driven people that probably, if I suspect, are not that connected to their bodies. And so when you ask like, where's that anxiety showing up? They're like, it's in my brain. It's in my to-do list. It's in the thing that needs to happen. So how do you make that leap?
Yeah, maybe, okay, this is a good chance for me just to talk. I'll say two things. One is, and to talk a little bit about self, which is another kind of core principle of IFS. The first thing I'd say is it's different for everyone. Some people have more access to their bodies. Some people have less. And what's really cool about IFS is you can meet folks where they're at. There's no prescriptive, you have to be at a certain level of access to blank in order to get there. And the second thing I'd say is the kind of one of the core principles of IFS, one of the three core principles, one being we have many parts and they're all good. Another being we can work with them as a system. This third is about self. So what Dick calls kind of capital S self.
Okay.
Self is, it's not a new concept. In fact, Dick was criticized by many therapists for bringing self into the therapeutic modality. It goes by many names. It's awake awareness. It's some people, it's Christ consciousness. It's Buddha nature. It's Atman. It's soul. It's this
God
inside of us. It's this awareness that can be with, that's unblemished. It can be with whatever it is that's coming up. And one could say that one of the meta agendas of IFS is bolstering people's self energy, this ability to kind of be with whatever's going on, kind of take the perspectives of these different emotions and feelings that are cooking and weigh them and then lead the internal system forward. So self is a really, really powerful concept. It's a part of how I want to answer your question is, one of the ways that I work with super hard driving, fast paced clients is sometimes getting them to slow down for a minute to get in contact with this awareness again, which doesn't have to come with years and years of practice. And that awareness can really be with the different parts of someone's system. Does that make sense? Do you have any clarifying questions?
It does. It makes sense in that it feels very meditative in that regard, where like what I hear as you're speaking, what I hear is, you know, someone saying, you know, focus on your breathing so that you kind of leave that heady nature of like, what do I got to do next? And you're like, I didn't focus. I didn't even know I breathed as a human until I was like 35 years old, right? It's just like, it was just a byproduct of my existence was breathing. So I can see that. I also have someone who has read a lot of kind of Buddhist and Eastern texts. There is a Eckhart Tollean kind of like, all we have is the present moment. That, my words, not yours. In that, like, in this, which I could see as a turn off to some people, if I'm interpreting it properly. But as someone who has drank the Kool-Aid, so to speak, I could see that, you know, bringing someone to that leap where it's like, no, you know, you have this thought, and again, this is not an IFS thing, but it's like, oh, I'm really nervous that the stock market's going down, right? And you can think of all the stock, the consequences of that happening. You might not be able to buy this thing that you wanted to buy, or you might get a margin call, or, you know, something like that. But while that's happening, all this shit's happening in your body. And, you know, like, you might have maybe you're building an ulcer, right? I mean, it's not a surprise to me that many of the people that listen to this on Wall Street have high, like, immediately at age 40, like, high blood pressure turns on, right?
Yep.
But I feel like that person still is like, okay, I'm seeing the stock market down. I'm picturing 9 different consequences. They all feel negative right now. What is the feeling? The feeling that I have in my body right now is not going to change anything. And so where does one go from there?
I love this question so much. I mean, it connects so much to my work with founders and execs too. This is like, where we start is, what's important? What do you want to achieve in your role, in your life? And I often work with folks they fall into like 3 major buckets, I'd say. One is folks who are operating their business and want to do it better. They want to create more harmony for themselves, on their team. They just kind of want to build a more efficient engine. The second category of folks are those in transition that are leaving something or trying to start something new and want to be more aligned. And then the third category of people, I'd say, are folks that are in crisis of some sort. Either they're in the middle of something, or they're running something, or they're trying to find something new, but there's like some kind of crisis that's bubbling. So
the hedge fund folks listening to this fall into all three. They're like, I'm all three.
Yeah. I mean, I just want to ground it from this ethereal world work into just like the world of reality.
Yeah.
And we start with like, what do you want to be different? Where are you trying to move? And that conversation will often lead to just kind of a few discrete areas that are important to them. And that sometimes in our work, it leads right away to outer action. Well, if you're feeling some anxiety in your chest because the market's dropping like a bomb, well, then sell. Take outer action first. So that, you know, outer action, it could be laying folks off. It could be setting a new strategy. It could be communicating certain things. So it's, let's not, separate this inner work from the outer work. So sometimes... Yeah. As we settle into those goals, just clear what outer work needs to be done. And oftentimes when you orient towards those outer actions, how do I be a better boss, manager, leader? There are these inner resistances that come up that kind of evokes. And it's that kind of inner work that is where this stuff can be particularly useful and available. So it's not so much you got to always be driven by the inner world, and that's the only thing you can do. Again, the way that I relate is like, you want to balance these outer and inner worlds.
Yeah.
And the inner work can help you become basically like waste less energy. So much of our times is spent fretting over the thing and then fretting again and fretting again, fretting again.
Great
and
point.
That as we kind of bring our inner systems online and start to understand them better and have more self-awareness, there just becomes less internal tension and kind of more clear, decisive action that can flow from it. So that's how I think about it.
Yeah, no. I'm glad you answered it that way. And I could say, like, from experience, I have not done direct IFS coaching, but kind of adjacent type yet. And adjacent style practices, I would suspect. But, you know, I did the episode about the business getting rocked in every angle, right? So as a reminder, it's like revenue fell 70%, had to lay off 5 out of 7 people. I live off margin. So my margin rates go up. My stock portfolio goes down, which is probably one of the scarier financial positions to be in. I mean, I had a lot of buffer, but still emotionally scary. And then, you know, this crypto that I own, which, you know, I don't really think about it, but it had gotten so big, like, loses 70% of its value. And I remember in that moment, I'm like, okay, like, this is some scary shit, but there's a few outer work. There was like, I sold some stuff, took down my margin, laid people off right away, had to pause different products. And then that was it. It's just like, it was over. And what I know that 10-year younger version of me would have been in crisis mode for a year. And because of, I think, subconscious kind of IFS programming, I was like, okay, let's take care of these things. Oh, when you see your stock portfolio go down, you immediately go back to like when you were young and you saw your parents get their car stolen, or your dad got that printer stolen from like on the subway in New York, or you got mugged and you're like, that's a thing, but the stock market going down has nothing to do with getting mugged as a child, even though when it's happening, it feels it's all the same patterning, so to speak. So I guess that would be like my mini, that would be my interpretation. And people turn to me, they're like, how did you make it through that? I was like, oh, that was pretty easy, you know? But as I wrote it all down, I'm like, damn, that was some fucked up shit that was happening, like all in the same month.
It is. It's what's really cool about that story for me is like, that is a great example of when you know all the shit you're doing is working. Yeah. You know, all the inner work, all the outer work, that stuff's kind of coming together in this moment of crisis, and it's working. And it's one of the fun things that happens for folks. Oftentimes when we're doing this outer inner working, you feel like we're slogging through a bunch of stuff. And then something will happen, some new crisis, some shift in the business, and people grok the changes that have happened internally and how they're showing up in them as a leader. And those can be some of the most fun moments. So anyway, all that's to say, that's like, whoop, 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 like signals going off that like what you're doing is working.
Yeah,
that was the experience for you instead of a year of crisis, which I mean, how wasteful would that year of crisis been?
Totally. And I made great decisions. Like I bought more stocks like at when I should have been delevering. I'm like, no, like I know what happens here. You buy things. Anyway, so I would love to, what's the best way to name some of the parts? You know, I've read enough to like have some representative subparts, but I want to kind of defer to you so we can kind of like talk in more specifics.
Yeah. Are you game to do a little demo?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, sweet. So where it might be useful for us just to start in this conversation is kind of right now, Kay, is there a place in your business where you feel any conflictedness or stuckness, where you're like wanting or trying to get something done that you care about, but you're having trouble making it happen? Just kind of curious if that rings any bells for you in your system.
I have, there is one. I'll give you two and we could pick from there. One is specifically in the business, I'm kind of at this tension point where it's a very like profitable lifestyle business. And it basically can cover our somewhat expensive lifestyle, and then my savings from Wall Street can grow, and like financially we're good. But there is this kind of voice that's saying, like, you know, like, I mean, I'm very transparent. The business made 250 grand. My friend told me the other day, he's like, you didn't do this for 250 grand, right? He's like, that's what you made when you were 20, 26 years old, and you're 44. And there's a part of him that's right. And there's a part of him that I'm like, but like, there's another part that says, no, like every piece is in place, right? I surfed this morning and going out with friends tonight and volunteering in my kids' school all in the same day, right? That's an average work day. So there is that tension. And in that tension, there is this kind of egoic competitive side that is saying like, no, I didn't do this all for 250 grand. Like I did this for seven figures or whatever, something bigger. So that's a tension. And so I'll pause there. If that's meaty enough, we can go with that. I had another example that's a little somewhat related, but more in like bigger picture life.
I love it. I mean, there's plenty there, and it's attached to business. So unless you're feeling more energy around the bigger picture lifeline, I'd love to hear that.
Let's do this one.
Cool. Yeah. So what I'm hearing from you is there's kind of one part of you that feels like what you have created, this lifestyle business, and your ability to show up for your family, is this is what you did it for. Like, and you get to do it every single day. And then there's this other side of you, this other part of you that's like, no, maybe we got to go, like, go bigger. Mm-hmm. This isn't big enough. Am I catching that right-ish?
That's right. And I would add that it's big in service of being seen. So I'll give you a very specific example. I'm on this WhatsApp thread with a bunch of entrepreneurs. And if you ranked us by, there's like 10 of us, and we're all kind of similar type entrepreneurs. If you ranked us by revenue, I'd probably be in the lower quartile.
Is it?
Or profitability. I don't like being in the lower quartile of anything.
Yeah.
But I know that to leave the lower quartile, I would have to make some trade-offs. Like, I don't work that much. I would have to work harder. Or I would have to see my kids a little bit less. Or I would have to travel more. Or I would have to, like, read more business books. Like, I don't even want to read nonfiction these days. For the most part, outside of spiritual stuff. So I don't like, but I almost ask to leave the thread because I'm like, if I'm going to be in the lower quartile, I might as well be dead. Oh. Like, I might as well not be on this thread. That's probably meaty enough.
I feel the tension. I feel it. So I'm curious, if you were to just pause for a second, Kay, and check in with your body, I'd be curious to hear if or where you experience that, like, I'd rather be dead, anywhere in or around your body, or even if it shows up as thoughts. How do you experience that?
So I would say, kind of in a very stereotypical answer, that I feel like I carry a lot of my stress in my kind of neck, trap, shoulder area, extreme kind of tightness there. I would also say, though, as someone who does pay more attention to their body throughout the day, there is above my heart, so, you know, upper chest tightness and a bit of shallowness of breath. Kind of in the upper right, you know, I guess the upper chest, but particularly, I'm sorry, above my heart, so left.
Yeah, good noticing. So I want you to just tune in to these two places for a second, because sometimes it can be two different parts that are showing up. And I just want you to see, maybe you could check if one of these two feels bigger or like it wants more of your attention right now.
It's definitely the traps and neck part.
Okay, great. And as you kind of settle in that terrain, the traps, the neck, the tension, is there anything else that you notice about it as you just settle in?
For those not on video, my eyes are closed. So it feels like it's intensified since we started talking about this.
Is it?
Yeah. So it's getting more intense. Tighter?
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you feel towards?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Tighter and almost like a rubber, like stretching or like taut, like a stretched rubber band.
Okay. So the stretched rubber band running up and down your traps, your neck. How do you feel towards the stretched rubber band?
Irritated.
You seen?
Like, kind of a leave me alone feeling. Get out of my way type feeling.
Yeah.
Why are you here?
Yeah. So maybe there's another part here right now too that is wanting this tension to just go away. Leave me alone. Does that sound right?
Mm, definitely.
I'm wondering if we could ask that part that carries the irritation if it would be willing to soften back so we can get to know this stretched rubber band a little bit better. Is that you just kind of ask internally, see if you get that permission?
Can I get to know you?
Ask the part that carries the irritation if it would be willing to soften back a little bit while we get to know.
Okay.
Yeah.
pretty resistant, but with a little like a little breathing, it's like reluctantly willing.
Yeah, well, let's just check with that for a second before we make it reluctantly go away. Mm. I just want to ask you, I wonder, between this stretched rubber band tension and this part that carries the irritation, which of those two might benefit from a little bit more care and attention right now?
The stretched rubber band part.
Okay. Okay. So I'll just offer to the part that carries the irritation, the leave me alone part. As it softens back, it's welcome to watch too. It doesn't have to go anywhere. And if it has anything that it wants to say, it's welcome to re-enter the scene. Sounds funny to say that, but can you just offer that to it and see if it has anything it wants to say?
Yes. Yeah, it's kind of curious, but it's happy to take a back seat.
Okay, cool. So as you settle back on the stretch rubber band, how are you feeling toward that now?
There's still traces of irritation.
Okay.
It's not as loud.
You see?
Yeah. So that's the part that was there that kind of wants this one to go away. So appreciate it for softening back just a little bit, giving you a little bit of space. And then I wonder, okay, if you could check with the stretch rubber band, you ask a question, what do you want? What do you want for me or for us? And see what it comes back with.
It's been like waiting to say this since we started. And it's saying, stop putting so much pressure on me.
Oh. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. I'm like, why are you so, like, why are you so intense? And almost to the point of like this is unbearable.
Well, what's this part wanting to have less tension put on it, less pressure?
Yeah. It wants a break. It's exhausted.
Yes.
Yeah. And if this part had a break, what would that make possible for you?
For the part or for me in general?
For you, for your system. Yeah. If this part could have a break, what would that mean for you and your system?
It would mean it's just a lightness to the system.
It's
kind of like a tire that's. It's really tight. It just like let a little bit of the air out and just like all the slack comes in.
It is.
Yeah. So this part's wanting some slack, some lightness. Is that right?
Yeah.
And if you had that slack, that lightness, what would be possible then?
Oh,
I had that lightness. See, that's where this confusion arises.
Okay. Yeah, so let's welcome the confusion too. There's another part that's feeling confused.
Yeah. Because the confused part was like, well, if like if we let some slack out of the system, like, what do we do?
That's it.
What should we be doing? Kind of what's the North Star, so to speak?
Oh, so whether this is a separate confused part or whether this is the stretched rubber band, these parts are wanting for you to have a North Star, like meaning and purpose. Is that right?
Yes. But it's more, it almost feels more specific.
Hey.
Like almost like if you use like an OKR where there's an objective and then that sits on top and then there's the key results.
Is it?
It wants to know what the key result is. It kind of knows what the objective is.
Nice. Okay. Amazing. So it feels like you've got the objective, but it wants clarity around the key results. And if it had that clarity around the key results, what would be possible then?
I immediately feel like that's a trick question because then it would just want another key result. It's almost like I'm witnessing the hedonic treadmill in real time right now.
What I'm curious to understand from this part, in addition to you, it showing you this hedonic treadmill, which is fascinating, kind of what is its higher purpose, its higher intention for you? It's trying to help in some way. And I'm wondering if it'd be willing to point us in the direction of how it's really trying to help you.
I mean, the word that immediately came up as you started to say that is the word love.
Yeah.
And unclear whether at this moment, whether it's love for others or love for myself.
Whoa.
Okay, so this part that's wanting these KRs and KRs and KRs is actually trying to help you experience more love, whether it's for yourself or for other people. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Totally.
Wow. Can you just give it a little appreciation, Kay, for that intention?
Yeah.
How does it receive that?
It's almost like it's been so buried amongst the other parts, I guess, that it's like, thanks for noticing, buddy.
It's
almost like, finally.
Yeah, finally. Finally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's fun to use the internal family, to use the actual family metaphor. It's kind of like the younger sibling that like people forget is part of the family.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, I'm still here, you know?
Yeah. But he's been working, or they've been working so damn hard, driving. Yeah. Unseen, underappreciated.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you want to offer to this part while we're here with this part?
Yeah, it's like a bit of an apology.
Yeah.
For you know, not enabling it to be seen.
Yeah.
Or not kind of honoring them.
Yeah.
And then like a lot of happiness, just like, like, dude, you're awesome, man. You're awesome, little fella.
Yeah, this part has been with you and has helped you accomplish some amazing things, I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So before we zoom out for now and we kind of do a debrief, I'm wondering if this part has anything else that it wants to share with you in the context of this conversation we're having about whether to lean in and do more, whether to keep doing what you're doing now with the lifestyle business, I'm wondering if this part has any wisdom of its own that it wants to share with you.
Yeah, it's just like, it's just like, you got this, you know, it's like, it's trust.
It is.
You're on the right, you got this.
Shit.
It's funny, it's like a lot of people that like just want to be told that you got this on a parts.
This is, yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead and thank it for that encouragement. And I'll just offer a bit of hope to this part and to the other parts of your system as well, that as you do this work, okay, whether it's IFS or any other flavor of inner work, these parts will be more seen, will be more emboldened by you got this, as kind of you step into a seat to lead this system forward. And there's an opportunity for more harmony and more just clarity on the path ahead. And these parts have a role to play in helping you get there. So I just want to pause to see how that little drop of hope lands for this part or any other parts of the system that are here.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, I think a lot of them just wanted to be acknowledged and seen.
Yeah.
So let's close things up with just a round of gratitude, Kay, for this part, Stretched Rubber Band, for showing up and sharing its wisdom. And to the other parts we met along the way, the part that carried some irritation for softening back, the part that was just above your chest, the part that wants what's best for you and your family. Just give one big sweeping bit of gratitude to all the parts for now. Then when it makes sense, come back and join me.
Whoa.
That was
pretty amazing. I'm still like, feel like I'm coming out of Plato's cave or something.
Take your time.
Am I on a podcast right now?
Take your time. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's so interesting to me consistently is as we dip into this inner world, these parts are there. And whether they're seen as emotions or parts or somatic, there's a lot of different flavors of inner work that we can do, but they're available. And when you kind of converse with them as if they are parts of your system, as you saw, they talk back. And it's that connecting, that the work we did to connect with this part's higher intentions can just be so beautiful by itself without doing any of the other burials that therapists or coaches will do in IFS.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it was pretty, I mean, I don't even know how long that was, maybe 15 minutes or so, but it was completely, completely disconnected from time, completely disconnected from the fact that we were recording this, right? Like, I didn't even cross my mind. So I was in it. And yeah, there was some real, like, I mean, for those listening, like, nothing here, whatever reaction is not, nothing here was planned, or no seeds were planted in advance of any of this. So this is, you know, totally like what you see is what you get.
It's just incredible.
It blows my mind, because here I was, you know, as the skeptic, I'm like, what are you going to tell me about this tightness in my neck that I've basically called stress for 40 year, you know, 35, you know, whatever, 25 adult years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this, like, which, you know, along the way, as I was meeting the other parts, they've shown up in other modalities of therapy and meditation and coaching and so on. Indeed. So maybe they were quicker to like rear their heads than in a normal, but maybe not. I don't have a basis of comparison. Yeah.
At risk of putting you on the spot, Kay, I'm just curious, what are you taking from what you saw, the interaction that you had? Is there anything that like jumps out at you in the context of that bigger problem that you kind of entered the conversation?
Yeah, I really think that there's this part of me that genuinely cares about other people that feels like it's at odds with this part of me that wants to make money.
Is it?
But ultimately, both of them, like, they want the same thing. Right?
Yeah. Could I talk a little bit about that?
Yeah.
Just from a theory? In IFS, one of the very common things that we bump into is, Dick calls them polarized parts. Parts that are kind of at odds with one another.
Oh, yeah.
And so if we had more time, what we would have done is get to know part A and understand its higher intentions, get to know part B and understand its high intentions, and then have them interact with each other so that they understand one another's higher intentions. And what you often see is, oh, we're on the same page. And once they realize they're on the same page, sorry, on the same team, they then will creatively help you brainstorm ways ahead that take both of their needs into account and that feel less like, I'm either doing this or I'm doing this. And that kind of thing can just feel magical sometimes.
Yeah.
So that's that what you just described is, two parts that are polarized, that are in tension, but that tension can be released.
And it's wild because, I mean, that's a very normal tension, right? To do things out of service and to do things for money. But it would never have occurred to me that tension is actually expressed physically in my body.
It's it.
Right? And maybe the point was just to use the body as the gateway to get into the tension, because intellectually, maybe I couldn't have gotten to that tension by just like rationalizing or using kind of the intellectual brain. I wonder. And for those who are listening, when Derek would say, thank that part, they weren't like little people inside, but anthropomorphic. I mean, they were entities in my brain, so to speak, shapes, whatever, but they were like actual distinct parts. Again, hard to delineate specific physically what they look like, but they were distinct parts where it's like, oh, I'm talking to you, like literally kind of like talking to yourself, but there's this, it's kind of like sounds like I'm on mushrooms or something, but there's this, there's this other part of you that's like you're having a conversation with yourself, and it's not, it didn't feel weird at all.
It is funny the way that works. And just to ground it for the scientists out there, from an evolutionary biology perspective and psychology perspective, one of my favorite books, it's my favorite title of all time. It's Everyone Else is a Hypocrite. And in the book, he kind of builds this, a biological or psychological underpinning for how we as mammalian creatures have kind of like built up all of these different functions in these minds and bodies over time. It wasn't just kind of like one big structure, and that those different structures that are all built in and around our body, they are oriented towards different fundamental needs. And so in some ways, one of the ways that you can kind of rationalize the terrain that we're just in is, we're kind of talking to just different needs that are in the system in different places, potentially in our minds, and they show up differently in our bodies too. So
it's
not just
beautiful.
It's not just imaginary go away. It's got some real substance to it.
And based on what we just did, is it easy to bucket like, oh, that was your exile, that was your manager, that was your firefighter, or is it not that?
Yeah, I have a sense as you get to know these parts, you'll be able to understand them better. But my sense, Kay, is that what we just talked to was a series of managers. So protector parts who are kind of oriented towards the future. This is what we want for us. It's just based on the way that was kind of bouncing off of. Does that land for you in your experience too?
Yeah, I do. I agree. I think that there's an exile somewhere in there of like someone kind of clamoring for worthiness.
Yes. Yes, you're spot on. The part of the theory I didn't share, sorry to cut you off, is with polarized parts, in addition to getting them to work with each other, oftentimes polarized parts are protecting an exile, usually the same exile or set of exiles. And with their permission or trust, and this is often done in therapy, you can go to those exiles or that exile and offer healing to that exile. And then those protector parts are more free to take on roles that are more aligned for them too. So it's a really interesting dynamic.
Got it. So the two, though, so that like service love part and the money part is protecting this kind of like fundamental unworthiness exile part.
Potentially.
And when you go to that exile part and heal that part, then the two other parts are much freer to kind of do their thing and maybe harmonize.
Exactly.
Which is crazy as you think about it. You know, people often say things like, I want to live in alignment, right?
Yes.
And, you know,
yes.
Oftentimes, you know, you'll hear, I don't know, I think like Ramit Sethi is like, show me someone's calendar and I'll show you their values, right? And so, you know, that is a version of alignment. But what we just did there is like such a deeper sense of alignment.
Yeah. And this goes back to the kind of the outer and inner work as well, that you can kind of manufacture some of that alignment by doing things like aligning your calendar with your weekly goals and objectives and your 10K projects. And that's one flavor of alignment. And this other flavor in the inner work world is, you can create alignment that actually over time just starts bubbling out and manifesting in your outer work too. It doesn't take work to take some of that inner alignment and have it start showing up in your life. So it's a really powerful way to be aligned in the way you're describing.
Yeah. And so if someone's listening and they want, what are different gateways? I mean, we'll put the link to No Bad Parts. There's a ton of the way you just coached me, there's a ton of those as podcasts. They're pretty remarkable to watch other people. If you're skeptical of it or if you just don't think it would work for you, what are other ways? And obviously you can hire different IFS, coaches, therapists that have IFS in their toolkit. I know like Dick Schwartz has a workbook, like a journaling type prompt thing. I never looked at it, but are there other ways to investigate this?
No, you actually just covered the bases. Okay. And I'd just say, we'll include these in the link notes, but the place that I recommend that most everyone start if they're interested is with No Bad Parts, either the physical book or Kindle book, or there's a great audiobook that includes some exercises that are led by Dick as well, kind of into the parts terrain. And then if folks are interested in therapy or coaching, I'll just offer this to you and your audience too, that they're welcome to DM or email me. I'm Derek@DerekHaswell.com and I'm on Twitter, Dr. Haswell. And I have a network of both coaches and therapists who do IFS and just can help direct or point people in the direction of folks if they want to kind of like really get their hands dirty and try this on for themselves.
Awesome. Did we cover everything? I mean, do we do justice to the hour?
That was awesome. We hit IFS through and through. We didn't hit any of the other things that we could talk about, but that's really up to you. If there's anything in there that you want to hit on, we can do that.
I think that this is a natural segue for round two, because if there's like 20 minutes of me getting coached, where it's 20 minutes of less of getting to know Derek. So we'll have to do a round two here.
Thank you, Kay. Thanks for having me. And thanks for going in and sharing that with your listeners. It's kind of courageous to do. And I hope it's of service to folks as they explore their outer and inner worlds.
Thank you, Derek.
You got it, Kay. See you around.